This morning we get to hear stories of faith, but also just get to hear the story of the Lowen family. And I just want to welcome you guys up. I don't know who's all coming. All nice. We get both. So this is Sam and Kimberly, and just real brief. So Jason, who was the replant pastor for Main Street for a few years, came to the leadership team one day and said, "Hey, I know we're not in a place to take on any new things as a church, but I have this relationship with a couple, with a family, who have this desire to serve the people in Paraguay. And they need a sending church. They need someone to send them." And through conversations, found out it was you guys. It was the Lowens and their kids. And they were heading to Paraguay, whether we were sending them or not, I think. We had an opportunity to initially just basically be the church on a piece of paper that said, we're their sponsored church for the Christian and Missionary Alliance, or what's called Marketplace Ministries, where you go as a missionary and work and live and invest in the community and get to share the gospel. So that's where it started. And I've had a chance, and some of us in the church have had a chance to get to start to hear what God is doing in their life, and we're going to get to hear that this morning. And as we were hearing stories, it was like, we want to do more. We want to start, like, how can we hear more? How can we learn more? How can we be a part of what God is doing? And so I think I shared this last week for those of you that were here, but if you didn't know it, part of our tithe, part of the money that comes in from you guys that are being generous and just investing in Main Street and in the mission that we have as a church, part of it goes to missionaries that are part of our network, which is multiple churches that have agreed to say, hey, we're going to support and send a couple of missionary couples. But then we were fortunate enough to start, I think it was December or January, we started giving just a small amount financially to you guys. It's way not enough. I want to do more. I think we're going to do more in the future, but it's a step where we're saying, hey, we believe in what God is doing. We want to invest in it. We need to have skin in the game. Like, we can't just say we believe in missions. We can't just say that, like, hey, that's really cool that you're doing that, and we'll pray for you. Prayer is awesome, and we need to be praying. But we also need to kind of put our money where our mouth is. And that's part of what we do with the funds that come into Main Street, is we look for ways that we can reinvest into the mission that God has called us to, and both here in Vancouver, but also we can do it globally. So that's the Reader's Digest version of how we got to this point. And then you guys have been on, I wouldn't call it furlough, you guys got to come home. Got a break for the summer, and are heading back on August 2nd. Is that right? Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit of your guys' story about, like, before you guys joined the mission field, kind of went on the mission field, how you got there, and then maybe a little bit about your family too. And feel free to split between you guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam, Kimberly again, and thank you so much. We're so proud to be sent to be part of this church. Thank you, Brian and Julie, for how you have adopted us and you've supported us. They've just been, they've been Jesus to us in so many ways, and you guys have been too. So we're excited to be here and share just a small part of what has happened in the last few years. So yeah, I'll start with just some background. So my wife and I, we're both from Vancouver. My parents were born and raised here, but my parents are actually Paraguayan. So my mom and my dad were born in Paraguay. My dad as a Mennonite, living there kind of in a colony. They came from Russia after the war, and then they settled in Paraguay. So my dad is German Mennonite, my mom is native Paraguayan. And long story short, my dad moved here before I was born. met my mom when he visited Paraguay, so then he brought her to the States. And so then I was born here. No Spanish in the home, no German in the home, nothing but English. What a shame. if you're a parent, you kind of know the work that goes into, being with your children. My mom didn't have the effort to teach us Spanish or Guarani, which is the second native language of Paraguay. And so, yeah, I just grew up in America, confused by some of the things my parents did, but assumed it was cultural. And yeah, so I grew up here, and Kimberly, you want to tell about your background and family?
Sure. Well, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I came to faith when I was 18. And then I think, as I was growing in my faith, I worked at Revolver. And I had two coworkers. One was coming off the Christian field, and then one was going on. And it was with Fiverr, and they just really just talked about their faith and what they experienced overseas, and it got me to do a DTS. The Holy Spirit used that to prompt me to do a DTS, and through that experience is when God really marked me as a calling to go overseas. And while I was in South Africa, Sam was in Paraguay, and you can help.
So we're sharing this because it's important in regards to why we're prepared about what we're doing there. Just so you know, we don't want to go into details, but it is significant. So when we were dating, we met at Clark College. We knew Clark College.
Nice school. Yeah,
alumni. Alumni. Yeah, not the best mascot, but so we met at Clark College in math class, and long story short, she got the prize. We grew together, but then we felt called to go on our own separate. And so I went to Paraguay for 3 months, and she went to South Africa, and then it was on those two trips that God gave us a calling of, hey, I want you to go to the nations. And so then we got married as soon as we got back from those trips in 2012, and we were like, okay, God, we'll go to the nations, just tell us where and when. And we ended up not going right away. We ended up preparing for 8 years. It was this long process. We were with Frontiers, which is an organization that only sends missionaries to the Muslim world and to the unreached. So the hard places, no gospel, no missionaries, that's what they send people to. So we were like, all right, we'll do that. So 8 years we prepared, we got counseling, we got training, we were raising kids at the time, and we were ready to go. And then our daughter was born with a sickness, and we were caring for her for a year and a half. That was 2019, then we took the area on hold. We said we can't go overseas, we're just going to focus on our health, our family. And we were ready to go, and then everything kind of just stopped. And so, yeah, so that's where we were before we went into it.
So you got three kids. Can you tell us a little bit about your kids? Love to hear their personality or.
Okay, so our oldest, Elijah, he has a lot of life. He's very outgoing, he's an extrovert, and he's super loud, and he keeps us young, and we're really excited how God's going to use him in the future. We don't want to, change him, because we know it's been marked, as he was a little baby. I just saw it, and wow, he's going to have a voice in this world, and
he came out of the womb screaming lazy.
I know. No, he's so much fun. And then Isaiah, he's very mischievous. I'm sure most children that are the middle child are. But he's really smart, and he's creative, and he's very compassionate. I would say all three of our kids are super compassionate. And he has a faith. He's always wanting to pray. When I'm sick, he's like, let's pray. In that moment, we don't think about it, but that's how God uses our children in our life. Reminds us, go to him, go to him. And then Amelia, she is an extrovert as well. Everyone's really drawn to her. She's really nice. I would say she's really outgoing as well, but she uses it to, kind of protect people. She uses her personality to, protect others, and it's really healing to me, because I'm used to strong like personalities as women to be kind of like aggressive or like try to put others down, and it's really beautiful how God is using her to like protect others and to do good, and I love seeing that.
It's been, you guys came over a couple days or last week to just hang out for dinner, and my daughter absolutely loved hanging out with all of your kids. Like, she was just like, this is so much fun. So, very cool. So, I'm going to kind of come mix these questions up a little bit, but what was it that brought you, or that took you to Paraguay? Like, what was the initial kind of like, this is what my job's going to be, or the role? And then maybe kind of give us a little bit of like what that daily life looks like for you guys as a family, like if you're doing your job at the school, what you come. And then also kind of where the kids doing, what are you doing, Kimberly, and that kind of thing. And then we'll talk more about opportunities.
Yeah, so we, like I said, we were here caring for our daughter in 2019. We did that for a year and a half. And that was a very critical year and a half because it was a pandemic, our daughters in the feeding tube, we were homeschooling our children, our middle son had speech therapy at home, my daughter was living with us because she was in an abusive relationship. My sister, the difference. My sister was living with us. So anyways, all this was happening at once, and it was really time for us to reach a new level of faith and intimacy with Jesus, and we couldn't rely on anybody. So we really, it was, I don't know if you guys have experienced this in your spiritual walk, but there's a season where you kind of hit this wall and you kind of either go one or two ways. And for us, we were secluded, but we got so much deeper with the Lord in our intimacy with Him. And it was during that season in 2020 where God spoke a word to us. We were asking Him, like, what do you want us to do? We feel kind of lost. We don't want to. I was working in finance for a company here called Russian Investments. Very comfortable job, very well paid, we were kind of living the American dream, but it was not fulfilling. And so we just asked God, and he spoke a word, protector of children. That's what he said. And it was very clear, it was very out of the blue, but we knew what was in. And then we kept praying, and then he said, Paraguay, and we're with children. That was it, that's all he gave. So we said, all right, well, I guess we'll go and see. See why he gave us that word. And he kept opening doors. He kept confirming. And again, if you're a Christian, this is how God works. He never gives you the full picture. He never tells you what's going to happen. He just says, you know me and you trust me? Here's a word and go. And so we went. And we went.
So before that, as Sam said, we were planning on going to the Muslim world. And we even picked team leaders in Indonesia. Like, we were interviewing like multiple leaders. And so we chose the team, we were waiting for our daughter to be born. But like, it just felt like there was this big wall. Like, every time we tried to pursue Indonesia or going there, like, we just felt like we couldn't push through it. And so when this like new word came to us about Paraguay, like, oh wow, this is strange, this is new, but we were like, you know, we just wanted to be obedient. And it felt so different. I don't know if you guys experienced this, but it was just like open gates. Like, we didn't even have to try. Just everything like felt and like, you know, in the path, and we just kind of walked into it. And it was like, it was effortless. And so we were like, okay, we have a lot of peace about this. Like, this is meant to be. And we had this urgency, like, we had to go right away. Like, you know, as humanly, we're like, oh, well, let's like save up as much, like, as much as we can. So we just got promoted. And, but God was like, no, like, I didn't tell you to go then. I'm telling you to go now. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so then we got to Paraguay with some savings and with our family. And so the original plan was to stay with my family who lives in the country. My mom's side, like I said, is Paraguay. They live very rural outside the city in Paraguay. And so we went there. There was a home that was part of the family, like my grandma's house, who she passed away. But we just went to the country. We were living there. And we were like just kind of trying to feel out why we were there. And it was very difficult. We went from really nice, in, you know, heating and cooling and nice houses to like this rustic, open air kitchen house, and we're trying to start a garden, and we're like, what are we doing here? You know, she she's like cooking in her camping gear, like when she's camping in the kitchen every morning. Yeah, things were not good for those 3 months. And I told her, oh, don't bring any warm clothes, it doesn't get cold there. And it was cold that summer, that winter. And we were like not prepared for that. And so yeah, so that was the first 2 months. We were like, all right, maybe we should just go back for these days. Well, she was like, we should go back. Like, oh, God, there's more. So then we moved to the city. So let's drive to the city. It's more modern, it's more, you know, there's apartments, there's shopping malls and stuff. So let's drive to the city. So we moved to the city, and that's where we kind of found what God called us to pray right for. And so, yeah, we moved into a season of me as a teacher. So we visited a school, which is where I currently work at. They asked me to be the teacher there. First basketball coach, then math teacher, and now and Bible teacher. And so I became Bible teacher and spiritual life director. I've been doing that for 4 years. And there's more stories of that we'll get there. That's kind of our day-to-day is me as a teacher. Our kids go to that school. And Kimberly, I want to share what you do.
Also, during that season, it was a very new thing for me because I was always a stay-at-home mom for like 12 years. And I homeschooled when we were here. And so it was the first time our kids went to school. And I just kind of I don't know if other people have experienced this, but when you enter a new season, you have a little crisis. Like, my identity has totally shifted. Like, I'm not a stay-at-home mom anymore. And so God really met me in that place. And it was I don't know, I was also struggling with that. Sam is going to work and he's he has something every day, and I'm like, what am I supposed to be doing with my time? And because almost everyone works, they have two jobs or whatnot. So it's kind of weird that I don't have anything. You know what I mean? And so I was praying a lot, and that's where God kind of led me into my new role. So I'll back up to give you a background of my experience. But my middle child, Isaiah, who is diagnosed with apraxia, so it's a motor planning speech disorder. And so at age 4, he couldn't even speak. And through the pandemic, the speech therapist trained me to do the drills at home. I had to do it 3 times a day with him. And so it was 30 minutes each time. But within a month, he started speaking. He was able to say 3 words at a time. And it was just, I didn't even know if he was going to be able to speak because it wasn't guaranteed. But she trained me, and I, so fast forward. And I communicated to the school that I was willing to tutor or, help young kids, they're struggling learning how to read and whatnot, because I have experience homeschooling. And I get this text one day. This was after a year of voicing my desire to the school, and I didn't. It was crickets. But God had to bring me into a place of just really relying on Him and receiving from Him, and and allowing my identity to be in Him, not in what I do. But anyway, so my heart was in the right place, and I get this text. It was in Spanish. I was still not very familiar with Spanish at that time. But I was hey, we have a son. Are you willing to teach him, tutor him? And so immediately I was oh no, I don't know if I can do this. I was kind of scared, but the Holy Spirit led me to say yes. And through that, right away I noticed he had the same struggles as my son, Isaiah. And he does go to speech therapy, but the speech therapist didn't diagnose him. All he said to the parents was, he needs more confidence. But he didn't have the ability to lift up his tongue or control his tongue or spit or blow, just all the same things that my son struggled with. And so right away, even though the parents think that, I'm just teaching him how to read, I incorporated the speech drills. And in 2 weeks, he was able to say all the sounds that he couldn't speak. And God keeps bringing me more and more students that are similar to that. Unfortunately, Paraguay is 50 years behind. So the speech therapists there aren't trained for this diagnosis of speech, apraxia. And it's incredible to step back and see the bigger picture of like, wow, God, like, I couldn't plan this, and if I did, I didn't think I would be able to. So that's why sometimes he doesn't like inform us. He just kind of puts us along the way. And then when we take a step back, we're just like in awe of him and his sovereignty.
So good. Yeah, it's, I mean, even just getting to where you guys are at, before we even start talking about what God's actually doing that since you've been here, this sounds sounds pretty incredible. And praise God, like just this timing in the way. I think just hearing how you guys spent so much time preparing one direction and God shifting that, and yet all the things that you've been doing, not only for preparation, but just in your own lives, was actually in preparation. God's like, nope, I actually have a better plan. Can you share a little bit more like about the ministry kind of side of things, both for school, but also just some of the unique opportunities that have kind of come, like some of the things that have kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I'm happy you said that, because as Christians, we must always be willing to go, and as we are filled and as we are given joy and peace and hope, then we must be willing to share that with those who don't have that. Am I right? Like that's a big part of our life and the life of a believer is to then share what we have. But you can't give what you don't have. Like you can't pour from an empty cup. And what we have found before I share some stories is that service is such a critical part of like joy and fulfillment and satisfaction. And when you are a part of a society that is constantly telling us to take and to entertain and to do stuff for ourselves, it's like not fulfilling, right? And so as a believer, as a Christian, yes, we serve, but it's also for us. Like the whole blessed is, it's for us to give and to receive, to give and to receive. It's so true. And I wouldn't say that I am sacrificing much. Like I'm receiving by giving. I just wanted to say that. But yeah, when I got to the school, I didn't know what to expect. Anybody send their kids to Christian school here? No? Yeah. Okay. So when I heard the name Ascension Christian Academy, I was like, I don't want to teach there. I don't want to go to the unreached, I don't want to go to the broken world. Not this holy place, this Christian school. That was my mindset. And I was like, I don't want to teach Christian school, Ascension Christian Academy. Man, was I wrong. I got to the school and they were like, oh, here's, you're going to have the ninth grade class. And then I heard whispers from like even the principal, oh, that class, oh yeah, they're that class. Like, are you sure you're ready for them? Like, they got some really, they're the worst in school. Like, they do this, they're mischievous, blah, blah, blah. I was like, why are you speaking that identity over them? Like, are you kidding me? It was crazy. That made me so upset. But like, I was given that as my home class. And you guys, this class was, I mean, they were everything that people said. At the same time, they were children suffering. And they put up this like this persona, like they're tough and they're mischievous, but really inside, what are they? They're broken. They want to know their identity. They want to be loved, right? And so I show up in this class, and the first week my girl comes up to me. She's like, in that class, do you know someone died here before? And I was like, really? She's like, oh yeah, we all died here spiritually a long time ago. And like in her ninth grade way, just kind of laughed and walked away. And I'm like, what was that? Like, are you serious? And it was crazy because I kind of like was the environment at the school. It was memorize your verses, mandatory service hours, be a good Christian. And these kids were like, okay, good. And you know what? And I was like, this is not healthy. This is not good. And so in this class, I was a Bible teacher, and I would teach them the history of the Bible, like I had to every day. And their eyes would just glaze over, and they would just like do their work. And I was like, this is not right. Like, this is not healthy. We can't continue to do this. And so we kind of like prayed a lot, and just throughout the Bible textbook, like, we're just going to like talk with these kids and just be there for them, high schoolers. And like one day we watched The Chosen, eat popcorn. Afterwards, we were just chatting about it. And they're like, you're already lost. Like, don't you know where the bad class? Are you just going to leave, like, a lot of teachers? Because teachers, like, can go, like, 70% turn away in school. Like, you're just going to leave us and go to other teachers. Like, what do you love us? And I was like, you guys, it's not my love. Like, God loves you so much. It's his love. And that love will never stop. And they all, like, clapped because it's like, Christopher. You know, like, the whole class is like, I'm applauding. He's not here. And, like, that just started this beautiful season of, like, God, the urgency was, like, these 13 children that were all tough and acting out, like, they were broken. Like, missionary and pastor's kids, primarily. 90% missionary and pastor's kids. Parents are busy every weekend doing mission trips. Pastors sharing, and they're just like, they have to be there. And so, yeah, I think everyone just kind of like, we were like, okay, like, this is our ministry. It's like loving these kids. Ironically, less mandatory Christian disciplines and more father figure, taking them out to lunch, doing activities, and they just like open up. And yeah, it was just amazing to see the transformation over the 4 years with these kids and how, like, where they are now. Like, we just graduated this last June, and like, I'd say about 11 out of the 13 of them, dramatic meeting Jesus, like, what you read about in books, like, oh, they get it, and they met Jesus, and they were a devotion. I had that for the front of my devotion, and I put it all into one album. I just want to copy and give to you, but really, really cool how God used us to introduce them to Jesus. So, yeah, that's a big part of why we're there, is to be that. And it's not just that class. Like, as spiritual life director, I was able to like really change some of my curriculum in the school. And a lot of the students are really interested now in meeting Jesus. So, that's a big part of what we're doing. Should we share a couple of those?
Yeah, that's that, because I know there's some other open doors.
Two other things that are really important that to share with you guys. The second is indigenous unreached groups in the world. You guys hear about that? People have no access to the gospel. That was our passion before we went to Paraguay. And then we're like, okay, we'll go to Paraguay. I reached place. Well, there's actually like thousands of villages and places in Paraguay that have not had the gospel. They have no idea Jesus existed. They don't have the Bible in any language. And so we started meeting missionaries that are doing that there. And so what we started to do was incorporate the students and go into these villages. These students that have now met Jesus and have a desire, not duty, but overflow. Now, as the cool teachers, we could be like, go on a field trip. Okay, let's go and do a soccer tournament. And that was there. Like, hey, can we go to a soccer tournament and take lunch in this indigenous group? Like, sure, let's go. Do it. Like, all right, they raise the funds. They make everything, and we go for the day, and we go, we serve these kids that have nothing. And these kids are, my students are like filled with joy because they're experiencing serving and giving, right? And so we're shepherding them and serving others, and they're receiving joy. You see how that works? And so it's not about us. It's about like, hey, you know Jesus? If you serve, you're going to be fulfilled. And that's what they're doing. And so now we get to do both. We get to retrain to go to indigenous groups. We're doing that there with the students. And it's just so much fun. We're going to continue to do that with the school. And then the third thing that we're doing is prison ministry. I don't know if any of you guys have been involved or have a heart for that. Some don't have a heart. I've gotten some really weird feedback from people when I say I go to prisons. I'm like, why would you do those people that? They don't deserve that. You should be there yourself, like helping these people that have done these horrible things. We have been going to this prison, and I don't know if we have a video.
We have a video. Okay. So it's the YouTube video.
So there's a prison in Uruguay that's
known as one of the most dangerous in the world,
and it was part of a documentary that is on Netflix. And it's just a minute of what this prison is like.
This side here.
Por eso no tiene que tener la mano.
Okay, so we guys see that. What's your main reaction? Oh, that's scary. Scary men with knives, dangerous. You guys know what's crazy? I've been to that prison every month since last year. And I was also scared when I heard about it. But you know what the similarity is? It's like, remember all those students when you heard, oh, man, they're people, they're bad, they're... It's the same thing. Those ninth graders were actually, they were masking their pain by being tough. But inside they were broken and they wanted love and they wanted purpose and they wanted to know who they were, right? Same thing in prison. I go to prison, the men in there, the majority of them, they are just lonely men who made some really bad choices, and many of them actually want to change. And they're not scary with knives, you know. Netflix does a really good job of making, you know, dramatizing it. But when you go there, they're just hanging out themselves. Like, they don't have nothing to do, you know? And so, so we've been going every month, taking their basic needs. They're not provided toilet paper, they're not provided soap, they're not provided mattresses. Most of them are not, they're digging through the trash. That's no way to live as a human, right? So we raise funds, it's just grassroots, kind of, you know, post on social media. We raised $10,000 last year, just posting videos on social media and going. And this is the most beautiful part. When we take a mattress, or a bed sheet, or a bar of soap, donated. The students at the school write a handwritten note or a verse, and everything that we can even make has a verse in it. I think there's a picture that we have that should be up there. Maybe there's a second video.
There's a second video.
Okay, I'll show this one first. So there's five pictures here. Bottom left is the note a student wrote at the school, Psalm 34:18, with the picture. The one on the right, bottom, that's the guy who just got in there, and when we gave him his note, he immediately put it next to the picture of his hands, and he said, this is my motivation to get out of here. Thank you. I'm going to look at this every day. The middle one is my students preparing the bed sheets. They don't go with me, by the way. Just so you know, I'm taking underage students to the prison. I just go, but they pack it up for me. Top right is a teacher who I invite people to go with me. So teachers, friends, pastors. In Paraguay, it's not normal for people like us to go serve. It's a pastor's job. Oh, Ryan, you go and you serve. Oh, Sam, you're the missionary. You do it. We'll just go to the church and we'll give you our money and then you do the service. No, we all serve, right? And so I invite teachers to go with me. And so the top right is a teacher with MMA giving him his car and his mattress. And then the top left is my favorite. You guys see that? Crumpled up. Nailed to a cement wall, yo soy tu Dios. I'm your God. And I don't know what the rest of the verse says, but they put them on their wall and they stare at this. Who knows how long they're going to be there? Years, right? The best part of going to the prison is not giving them a mattress. The best part is giving them the living word that is going to like speak to their heart for who knows how many days they're going to be in there, right? And the students are seeing this, and they're like, oh, wow, I'm a big person included in myself. And so it's serving multiple things at once. So the last video I think I have is a video of the men worshiping. There's a Christian pavilion, and last time we were there, I took a video of them worshiping together.
Yeah. Sorry. The audio is gone. I had to pause it.
Okay. I got it.
Unless you guys want to watch Dude Perfect.
That's later. Thank you.
There we go. These are all inmates from the worship team. Thank you. there's more meaning to me when I worship there than I can worship here. Because we have the freedom to do that, right? These men have done some horrible things, but they taste God's grace even deeper. And I think they are going to be blessed because of the realization, right, of the gospel. And so I just want to encourage you guys, like, this is the stuff that we're there, we're doing this stuff, but you right here, you guys are the ones who are supporting us. You're part of our team. And so when we take the gospel to the inmates, we take the gospel to these students, it's us doing it, right? And we can't do it without a team. And so God's had an impact in Paraguay, in the prison, in the school, in the indigenous, and we just want to continue doing that in partnership with you guys.
I just wanted to say, so we kind of covered basis on the school, empowering the students to follow Christ, about empowering the teachers to live out Jesus' way in their communities. We kind of talked about the problem with, just the education system and not, being able to support, children with special needs, for example, a speech disorder and whatnot. And then, the problem with, people who are in ministry in Paraguay but then neglect their children. And, we're not there to, show up and, tell everyone, you're doing it all wrong. We are just there to simply be with and live out our faith and invite others into what we're doing. And it's, really beautiful that, we work normal jobs because it goes against that belief system that you have to be a pastor if you want to do ministry. Or even if you're a Christian, you have to quit. Like, if you were a soccer player, you quit. Like, you can't be a professional soccer player and be a Christian. Like, it's very, backwards and, really messy. But in every society, it's kind of messy. But we're just showing up, and God's doing a lot. And thank you for just partnering with us. Prayer is, the biggest need because it's spiritual warfare. God's doing a lot. He's breaking down a lot of walls, and the enemy doesn't want his children to, live boldly.
And last thing I'll say before we go to the next question is, as far as the prison, sorry, there's a lot going on, so I know that this is a lot that I want to share with you guys so you can pray. Our desire, in that documentary, if you watch it, I recommend that you do, there's three main characters that you saw. The first guy who was translating, he just escaped. He's still in prison, and he saw the man, he escaped, and he was in the lab for 6 months, and they just caught him. Put him back in. Second guy you saw with the tattoos, he killed himself 2 years ago. And the third guy you saw that was boxing, he committed a crime 6 months after he got out, and now he's back. You see the trend there? Right? If there is no transformation of the heart, they go back to whatever vice, whatever loneliness that they experience. That's real life. That's a huge part of the prison system. So transformation. So something we're going to be working on this year is bringing a men's retreat to do in the prison. So John Eldridge, people of all that heart, they asked me to go to Texas to see how they do those retreats because they want to start getting a summer. So I went 2 years ago, saw that it was done. I thought it was very good, very not like a typical retreat. Healing prayer, processing childhood trauma, journaling, quiet time. That's part of the retreat. Our desire is to take that into the prison. And in fact, next month, you guys can pray because we're going to one in Colombia to a retreat, and we're taking one of the chaplains of the prison with us. He's never been on an airplane. He used to be in Takabu. He got out. Now he's the chaplain for the prison. And he's going to come with us to see how they're done, and the goal is to do that in prison. Because if you can bring transformation to these inmates, it doesn't matter where they are, in prison, out of prison, they have the hope of Jesus in them, right? That's the goal. The last thing is, this Bible cover was made by an inmate in the prison. They're very gifted in leather works. And so I asked him, hey, would you mind making me a Bible cover? And he handcrafted this, he stitched it, threw the print on leather, and I said, it was kind of the idea, but I needed a prototype. And so he delivered. This is a good quality Bible cover. And so the idea is in this coming year to have them make these for people in the churches promoted here in the States. We pay them an honest wage, and then they're doing something purposeful, right? And we're the connection to the States where we can have them live here. So look for that in the coming months and years. If you guys want one of these, I'm going to get a link where you can order one. But again, it's giving them, running their needs practically, but also spiritually. We have to do both.
So good. I'm sitting here thinking, as you were sharing, just about the worshiping and the idea that, like, as I've prayed about our church, the thing that's come to me is that we're a family that's gathering at the intersection of brokenness and grace. And I think we don't recognize the power and the transformation that happens when grace enters into brokenness. And we minimize, we say grace, but we don't really understand what that means when it comes to redeeming and restoring. And so, amazing. And we can keep sharing for a lot longer. See, it wasn't me doing all the talking this time. But tonight, you guys are back here at what time? I can't remember what time. 4:00. Thank you. You got asked every week when we've announced this. But tonight at 4:00, if you want to come back and hear more about what's going on, have time to ask questions, to engage, I think we're doing, there's barbecue, so there's food. And you're welcome to come back. But I want to just kind of wrap our time up. What are some practical ways as a church that we can come alongside and just encourage, support you guys in this as you guys head back?
I mean, prayer is anything, like Kimberly said, like it's a spiritual warfare, and there's, you experience that almost more when you're overseas, I feel like. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of spiritual warfare that we don't recognize, I think, as the West. In the West, we call it mental illness, we call it different things, and maybe there's a combination of both, but when I feel like we're doing things that God is calling us to do, it's naive for us to think that we can do that alone and not have a team of people praying for us and for what we're doing right there. So we have a prayer chat on WhatsApp. You know, WhatsApp is not popular in the States, but it works for us. And there's a link in the back. There's a card back there. Rose is holding it up. There's a QR code. If you scan the QR code, then you'll be added to our prayer chat. And we will update prayer requests, pictures. Every couple weeks, we'll do like a praise or something. It's just way more interactive. And so if you want to join that, and be a part of our team and pray for us and bring us around, that would be a great support. And then also notes, we brought some colored paper, construction paper, and markers back there. If you want to write a note for an inmate in Spanish and then bring that to us before we leave, that will be handed to an inmate. So maybe there's a verse you really like, and like, this is my verse that I love. You can write one on there, right? You have to write it in Spanish, you have to Google or translate it. You can figure that out. Write it on there, give it to us, and we'll give that to them.
I want to just follow up on that one. You can take it home. If you bring it back next week, I'll make sure it gets to the lawns if we don't see them between now and when they leave in August. So we'll follow up. So
if you come tonight and you have to do one, I'm making it a little bit more. If you want to be forced to do it, just come tonight.
Get your homework done early.
Yeah. You just bring it as your pastor in for this real person. Kind of joke, kind of serious. We're doing tonight. Pray with that, and then support. I mean, this church is supporting us, but we need 12 more supporters of $50 a month to meet our goal for this trip. And part of that is just expenses like travel to Colombia. The dollar went down 25% in comparison to the currency in Paraguay over the last year, so that obviously has affected our spending power. The school pays me a little bit, but it's not a whole lot. And so we're just kind of using the support from friends and family and from people who believe in us to be able to live down there and do these things. So if you want to give on that card back there, there's a QR code. If you want to sign up for one-time donation or which the ways we support.
It doesn't have to be $50. It could be $25, and it doesn't matter. But yeah, I just
feel like that's cool. If you're a family of four, it's $50 each. hey, you don't ask. so appreciate you guys coming and sharing. I think
I had several people comment the first Sunday that you guys were all here, where it felt like you guys have been a part of the family, and like, and that's, I think that's one of those things for us that just affirms, like, this is where we need to partner. This is the things that God's inviting us into. So thank you for being part of the Main Street kind of family, and we're excited to see how God's going to keep moving. We're going to transition to just a time of worship and response. I think one of the cool things that when we get to gather is we also get to take communion, and we get to be reminded of the reason that we're called to this kind of work, or that this work exists or happens, is because of the sacrifice that Christ first did on the cross. And we are commanded to remember that. Like, because if we're just going and doing good service, we're just going out with we're just a service agency, and it's missing the point of the service in the first place. We're the hands and feet of Jesus, not because we're amazing, but because God is amazing, and He's invited us into that. So when we get to take communion, it's that reminder of grounding us into His truth that His body was broken and His blood was shed so that we could experience true forgiveness and grace, so that we can share that grace